Blog Talk Radio.
Monday afternoon, we will be joined by Kyle DeMancourt in a little bit to talk about the National Basketball Association. What a great win yesterday on the PGA Tour for Billy Hurley III, winning at home in Annapolis, in Bethesda, sorry, but close to Annapolis. In a really great fashion with the pitching at 15, the birdie at 16. Just a triumphant win to get his first PGA Tour win a year after losing his father to suicide, a year after going through hell, basically. His father going missing, using this event, Tiger's Quicken Loan National, to help spawn the search for him. He was found and committed suicide shortly after. And to overcome all those mental demons in a guy this was his 104th start in the PGA Tour, a journeyman when it comes to golf, who had served his country so admirably. He said yesterday that on Saturday night he got a call from Admiral Mike Mullen, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, about how he was doing. So this is somebody who's been respected by those in the Navy. And to overcome all that and get this win is a huge moment. And I'm really happy for him, and I'm really happy for his family. Something positive to look forward to. And this is a guy... You know, he's not flashy, but he hit it, and as Tiger said, missed in the right places, hit it well, made the putts when he had to, had a really timely clutch chip in, and as Peter Costa said, that's probably the story of the year in golf. I just think because it's a perfect synchronization of place, tournament. This tournament was founded in D.C. to help the media, to help on the military. It was not created to help honor the media. We know Tiger's feelings on that. And lo and behold, here he is and gets this big PGA Tour win for his career. This week, Bridgestone Invitational and Barracuda Championship, we had the cancellation of the Greenbrier Classic. We send our thoughts and prayers and our hopes for a speedy recovery to everybody at the Greenbrier after those horrible, horrible floods that at last kind of killed 26 and injured many others. This is a moment where golf obviously is not the priority for them, and they have quickly proceeded to turn their attention to recovering their lives and getting themselves back on track. Totally understandable in the face of everything they've gone through. So the Greenbrier Classic is canceled. One less PGA Tour event, and an Open Championship spot is up for grabs at the Barracuda Championship as a result. So congratulations to Billy Hurley. A lot happened in the world of basketball. We'll get to that with Kyle DeMancourt in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Radio Network, and iTunes.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA's been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA's doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
And we are joined on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling by our great friend, Mr. Kyle DeMancourt. Talks the NBA and basketball at large with us. How are we today?
Doing pretty good, Jeremy. Thanks.
Vacation is a time to recharge the soul and to kind of decompress and relax and engage with things that you can't engage with normally. And last week you were on vacation, and I decided to rudely interrupt your vacation to tell you that Mr. Derek Rose had gotten traded. What the heck went through your head when you saw my text?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that I think I must have got about 50 text messages during that 10-minute span that it was announced. You know, I kind of, to be honest, I saw it coming. I knew that there were rumors grumbling even prior to last week that the Bulls were actively shopping him, and, you know, they were looking to kind of rebuild. And, you know, I agree the Bulls need a fresh start. They need to kind of start over and see what they can do. But, you know, you don't really believe it until it actually happens. And the Knicks were one of the teams I didn't really, you know, see coming. So, you know, I have nothing but the best wishes for Derrick Rose. Obviously, he had some great years in Chicago. I mean, injuries, unfortunately, a part of the game, and it kind of, you know, would have ruined his career to an extent and played the what-if game. I say that, you know, Derrick Rose is Penny Hardaway 2.0. People forget how great Penny was just because of how many, you know, serious injuries to his knee that he had. So, you know, I hope Rose has a great year. I really do. I think, depending on the type of system Hornacek is going to run in New York, I don't know. I can't see Rose being a really good triangle offense point guard, but who knows with Hornacek. I think the Knicks have some potential, and, I just wish Rose the best.
You know, I've been the guy that's informed you about Rose issues like three times, and I have the same reaction that I do when people text me about Tiger and I see my phone blow up, which is, there's one thing to say, like, you know, oh my God, somebody got traded and you're just stunned, but there's no emotional connection to it. With you, there's an emotional connection. This is your guy. This is your team. For a while, you guys were, you know, the second best team in the East. And as you said, if there's a healthy Rose, then a lot of these championship runs become, you know, true what ifs. Have you been able to separate Rose, the guy you like, from the fact that, as you said the other day on Twitter, I think it was, that the Bulls do need to completely blow it up and redo things, and maybe that's why they had Jimmy Butler on the trade docket come draft night, even though that was since refuted? You know, are you happy as an impartial observer, as hard as that is to be, that the Bulls are rebooting?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you said, the emotional aspect of it, you know, you certainly have a grasp on you and everything, but, you know, I think it's good for both parties. You know, Derek needed a fresh start. The Bulls needed a fresh start. I think, you know, for Bulls fans, you're tired of playing that disappointment game. I mean, every year they say they, you know, they got this potential and everything, and then another year, you know, Derrick Rose gets hurt, and you're dealing with that. So I think it was just the separation was needed. I think it was the right time. I think being in a contract year for him, an expiring contract, I thought they got great value back. I'm a big Robin Lopez fan. I think he's very underrated, and he's on a very friendly contract considering, you know, what the cap is going to look like in the NBA. But it's tough. I mean, I think with the Bulls, you look at what they've accomplished during the Thibodeau era, they were a very good team. I mean, people, you know, they may not have won a championship, but, you know, they were a very good basketball team, and they you know, accrued a lot of wins. They had good players, a good system, and, you know, unfortunately, injuries kind of derailed, you know, the what-if game with them. But I don't know. I think with Jimmy Butler, I think you have to build around him. I was curious with all that trade talk. I know, you know, he didn't really get along with Hoiberg this past season, and, you know, Hoiberg is Gar Foreman's guy, and they got to make that work. So, you know, I think at this point, stick with Butler and see what you got, and hopefully they can build around him.
And Mr. Hoiberg did not have himself a good day. He was very excited that the Bulls acquired the other Lopez. So
yeah, that kind of tells you a lot about the way the Bulls are right now.
Yeah. So clearly, you're gonna have to start identifying the person by the right name. Because, you know, if he calls out to Brooke in practice, that won't work.
Right.
No. All right. So now that we get that out of the way, because I had to get you through the emotional scar tissue first before we could, you know, move on to other things. Let's go back to Game 7. And when you and I talked before Game 7, I think we both agreed that the first, you know, 5 minutes, the first 10 minutes were going to be so crucial for the Warriors to establish themselves back at home and to get into a home rhythm. And lo and behold, we finally got ourselves a close game, and the Cavs, of all people, came out competitive on the road, came out competitive in that environment, and I just thought that from the second that game stayed close for a while into the first quarter, the Warriors were in trouble, because you would think a surge is coming, and a couple surges came, but they were always close enough to where they recovered. And then when the fourth quarter happened and LeBron and Kyrie went nuts, they were within calling distance to overcome deficits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we had talked about this on previous shows, you know, after Game 5, you know, on the Draymond Green suspension, that I had said that, you know, this is a series-altering incident, the suspension. And clearly, you know, Golden State obviously still had their chances. They were up 3-1. I mean, that's never happened in the finals to blow a 3-1. But I think losing him for that Game 5 and then having to go to Cleveland and pressure shifted again. I don't want to say that they were tired from chasing the 73. I don't truly buy that, but you could see in Game 7 they didn't have that spark that, you know, we're used to seeing Golden State have, especially at home. I mean, they were missing shots. Klay and Curry, I mean, they looked terrible. They were missing shots that they normally hit. They were completely out of rhythm. Draymond Green, I mean, if it wasn't for Green in that Game 7, we're talking a blowout in Cleveland's favor. I mean, Draymond Green put Golden State on his back that game. So you got to give credit to Cleveland. I mean, they came out. They defied the odds, essentially, and, you know, went into Golden State in Game 7, and they beat them. I mean, they made great defensive plays down the stretch. LeBron with that ridiculous block that I'm sure we'll be talking about for years to come. They hit key shots. I mean, Kyrie Irving looked like the poised point guard that we saw from Curry last year. So, you know, you give credit where credit is due. Cleveland obviously deserved it, but at the same time, I mean, you can really say that Golden State choked this one away, same as what OKC did the previous series.
And, I mean, you have previewed the next 5 minutes of our conversation very well. Let's start with Steph and Klay. I do not buy the injury. You know, look, every year, you know, come training camp, we always find out, you know, in some season preview piece, all right, fess up, how hurt, you know, were you in real life? And I'm sure with some of the players in these series, we'll find out at the time, oh, my God, they played with a torn meniscus or something. I didn't think Steph was hurt. I thought it was more that the defense played against Steph, frustrated him so much, stifled him so much, and just playing out exhausted. He looked like a tired person. And I think it's interesting that we have not seen Steph Curry since. I have not seen anything about him on a golf course. He showed up at something for his wife, his wife's food, something or other. But, you know, it's been 2 weeks, essentially, a week, and we haven't seen Steph Curry. I think that's a sign of just how exhausted, physically and mentally exhausted he was. And I think that played into their performance, because if you go back before the block, before any of that, he had a horrible turnover out of bounds in the fourth quarter down the sideline, which is not a play that Steph Curry makes. And I just think he was physically and mentally taxed.
Yeah, and that goes back to, you know, the chase for 73. I mean, you know, when Jordan the Bulls did it in 96, I mean, they consistently expressed the mental fatigue that it takes on you, and that it's such a grind throughout the season. And, you know, it's amazing that they were able to go through the playoffs only losing 3 games. People forget that the Bulls only lost 3 that entire postseason. So, yeah, what you were saying with Curry, I mean, he looked tired mentally. And who knows if the knee played a part. Again, that's an excuse, and I don't like to use injuries as an excuse, because LeBron didn't have his 2 top guys last year with him. So I think Golden State, they just kind of lost their swagger, and they got hit with a right hook after Game 5, and they just didn't get up. Klay Thompson, you know, this is 2 finals in a row now where he really hasn't played that great, that consistently. You know, when Curry is off, Klay has to be that guy. He has to be the Pippen to the Jordan, and he just didn't really show up in Game 7. So, yeah, some careless turnovers. Curry with that, you know, the play you're talking about, that behind-the-back pass that went on the bounce, I mean, that's just uncalled for in that situation. It could have definitely been mental fatigue. And, again, Cleveland with their defense, I mean, they threw bodies at him. They, you know, they were physical with him, and then I guess guess that's what you got to do with Curry, and so you get credit to Cleveland as well.
Talking to Kyler Manincourt, of course, about the NBA, the block. Where does that rank for you as somebody who is not only an NBA fan but is a connoisseur and a guy who likes to look back at past NBA history and has watched a lot of classic games and stuff? Where do you rank the LeBron block?
Well, I mean, it'll surely be up there as one of the best defensive plays, you know, we've ever seen, and especially if you take into account that situation. You know, you got to go back, when Kyrie Irving hit that three-pointer towards the end. I mean, that shot kind of gets forgotten because of how great of a block LeBron made, and nothing to take away from that block because it was amazing. But, you know, Kyrie Irving with that three-point shot, I mean, it was a difficult shot, and that kind of set the tone. But, you know, LeBron's done this. We've seen it throughout his career. He makes these plays, especially, you know, coming from behind on those blocks. It's just, and Iguodala did all he could, really, in that situation, and he was kind of put in an awkward spot. And he tried to get it up, and I mean, maybe a split second quicker, and we're talking about a goaltending, so that changed the whole dynamic of it. But, you know, that block will definitely be up there. And I remember I've seen players do that. I mean, Michael Jordan did that when he was 40. People forget that, you know, he came down and pinned the ball against the backboard. Granted, it wasn't the NBA Finals Game 7, but, I mean, I've seen that play done. But in this situation, I mean, that's going to go down as one of the best defensive plays maybe we've ever seen.
And you talk about the Kyrie 3. Remember they took Kyrie out and things got a little disheveled, and I think that's when the lead happened for Golden State. It really was one of those deals where Kyrie came in, they came out of that timeout, it was a set play for Kyrie, he drains it. It made all the difference in the game. And I think Kyrie, the way he finished on his layups, just the utter craziness, and then to drain that 3. If Game 5 and Game 6 were LeBron, I thought Game 7 was Kyrie.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, we all knew going into this whole season everything that Kyrie Irving was a, you know, really good player, but this was his coming out party. I mean, this completely elevated him to a whole new level. What he was able to do in the finals, I mean, you're right, those crazy shots, those layups, I mean, his body control, not many point guards can do that with that kind of body control and elevate the ball up and get it off the backboard. And his timely shot making, I mean, he's going to go, he'll be the unsung hero. I mean, LeBron will get all the credit, and, you know, most deservedly so. But Kyrie Irving, man, you take him out of this, and probably a Golden State sweep.
Yeah, seriously. And also, Tristan Thompson stepped up. And we talked about this before the season even series even started. Tristan Thompson needed to be last year's Tristan Thompson, and he absolutely was. The way he prevented those offensive rebounds, which I think goes back to how tired Golden State was, the way he got those offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds was huge.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, he's the modern-day Rodman, you could almost argue. I mean, he's terrible offensively. He's got zero offensive abilities, but he finds a way to contribute. He has a knack for the ball, and he knows where it's going to go. I can't even count how many times in that series where he seemed like every 50-50 ball was in his hand. I mean, he just found a way to get to the ball. He was hitting his free throws. So when he's doing that, I mean, it's pretty hard for anybody to beat Cleveland.
Somehow I don't think he'll be going to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, he'll let the real Dennis Rodman probably handle that.
Yeah, seriously. Talking with Kyle Manincourt about the NBA. All right, so now let's go to the end of the game. The raw emotion that came out of LeBron, that reminded me of the Olympics. That reminded me of something we'll be seeing next month in Rio, where you got these athletes from various countries who worked so hard for 4 years to build up for this moment, and it just overtakes them. This was the fulfilling of a promise and a weight and a burden that LeBron had walked and has carried for, you know, essentially 10, 12 years.
Yeah, I mean, this is why he came to Cleveland. That's the whole reason, was to deliver a championship to the city. How long they've been waiting for this, and to do it in the way that the Cavs did it, you know, come back from 3-1 to win two of them in Golden State. I mean, that's the improbable, the impossible, and they did it. So, you know, you can understand just the overall emotion that overtook him and the players, and it's just, you know, after last year seeing Golden State celebrate on their home floor, and now they get to kind of do the same to them, it's almost, you know, bittersweet symphony for Golden State.
And you And just the reaction of that city. I mean, the amount of people who turned out for that parade. I mean, geez. I mean that.
Yeah, that was insane. I've never seen anything quite like that before.
No, I have not either. 1.3 million people, and to compact downtown like that, and the response they got at the airport, is truly was just breathtaking. All right. It is time to interrupt this conversation with Kyle for a new segment called Would Kyle Do This? Kyle, would you walk around for 4 days with no T-shirt?
I don't know if I could get away with that.
What was J.R. Smith thinking?
I don't know if J.R. Smith was in his right state of mind on that day. So.
You know, he showed up at a golf course with no shirt. He showed up at Lakewood Golf Course, Lakewood Country Club, the day after the parade, still wearing no shirts. At least he had changed out of his game shorts by then, but he still had no shirt on.
I don't think he couldn't do any wrong, you know, after winning the final. So.
Yeah, but he got admonished by the President of the United States of America.
Yep. As JR, though, we've seen other things from JR before in his career.
If you could embed with one person who just won a championship on that Cavs team and just follow them around 24/7, every single move except the bathroom, who would you follow?
I'd probably follow Kyrie, to be honest. I think he's Uncle Drew.
Those guys deserve the party for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
Those guys deserve the party for a while. All right. We are done talking about the NBA Finals. We now move on to the NBA Draft, which I found incredibly boring, especially after the first two picks. Any great thoughts about this NBA Draft?
Well, honestly, I thought I'm probably a little bit the opposite. I thought it was very entertaining just because, you know, we knew who the first two guys were going to be taken. We knew those picks already. But, you know, to hear all the trades and all the, you know, a lot of movement with a lot of these guys flipping or, you know, going too early, I thought it was very interesting. I think a lot of people are trying to, a lot of teams are trying to set themselves up to get as much cap space as possible, which, you know, understandably so. But I thought it was actually an interesting draft. I thought, you know, outside of those first two guys, I wasn't really sure the way it was going to work. And, you know, I love the Chris Dunn pick for Minnesota, obviously with, you know, Tom Thibodeau there, and Chiz is one of my all-time favorites. I think he's going to make Dunn a potential all-star star, to be honest. And that's why the Bulls were so high on him and were very close to pulling that trigger on the Butler trade. I think maybe it was the whole Tibbs-Bulls relationship that probably, you know, ended talks. I don't know what was going on there. But I love Chris Dunn. Even as, you know, the Bulls fan, I love Denzel Valentine going at 14. I thought, you know, he's the type of guy that we need right now. We need a guy who can contribute now, who's a smart, high IQ player. So I love that pick. And, you know, I love what the Spurs and Warriors did at the end of the draft, as usual.
Always seems like the Spurs end up with a smart guy, doesn't it?
I mean, it's funny. Every year, you know what, they got the best draft grade, according to Chad Ford, in this year's draft. And, again, they find a way to get these guys. I mean, you know, Murray, who they drafted, he got an A-plus for his grade. And he's still young. He's still very raw. But what better system, what better coach to have than Greg Popovich? And, you know, Tony Parker was taken, I think, 28th pick overall. And look how that turned out. So.
Yeah, seriously. Let me ask you this. There were a lot of trades that happened, including a very elaborate three-team trade with the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers, to me, are interesting because they, like the Bulls, were also on the precipice for a while. Paul George gets hurt. It changes their whole dynamic. How close do you think the Pacers are to becoming what the Pacers were under Frank Vogel 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, I think it's a completely different team. I mean, this is more of a, you know, pace and space type team that Larry Bird's trying to create. I think that those old Pacers teams, they were more physical, especially on the interior when Hibbert was in his prime and David West was there and Scola. This Pacers team, I mean, yeah, you got Paul George. I'm not a huge fan of Jeff Teague. I think he's a little overrated. I think his defense is poor. He's a poor shooter. I actually like George Hill. I thought he was, you know, he's a good shooter. He's a bigger guard. Played well next to Monte Ellis. You know, bringing Thaddeus Young, and that was a good move. He's very good around the rim. Although defensively, he's terrible at protecting the rim. So there's a lot of pressure on Miles Turner, the second-year player, to protect the rim, unless they re-sign Mahimi. So, I think they're going to be a good team. Do I think, they'll challenge Cleveland? No, I don't. It's asking a lot of Paul George.
Talking with Cosmo Manincor about the NBA. Of the other trades that happened, any other stand out? Obviously, the Rose trade is the big headline. Anything else stand out to you?
No, I really like Utah getting George Hill because he's part of the three-way trade, and I just like him because of his veteran presence. And Utah is one of the up-and-coming young teams in the NBA. I mean, they're going to get Dante Exum back. Remember, he tore his ACL last year. So, he can play behind George Hill, and Hill can mentor him. So I really think that's an underrated move. I think Utah, in my opinion, will be a playoff team this year. I just love their system. I love the coach, Quinn Snyder. I love the youth. So I thought that was a very underrated, nice pickup.
All right. So we move on, and obviously we'll have Kyle on to talk free agency because that's what Kyle does. And I'm sure you're extremely excited for free agency, right?
And you have
already mapped out perfect contracts for every single player who's a free agent, correct?
Of course, I have it right in front of me.
Cool. Okay. So now we get to the Olympics. And by the way, I thought LeBron declining was the most no problem whatsoever. We totally understand dropout of anybody. Six straight years in the finals. He looked exhausted. He was exhausted. I think every human in the United States who's a basketball fan understands why LeBron James said no to the Olympics.
Oh, he deserves a break for sure.
That'll be one nice summer for LeBron. Okay, so we finally got 12 guys, which is a minor miracle for the U.S. We have Carmelo, Harrison Barnes, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Durant, Paul George, Draymond Green, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, Kyle Lowry, and Klay Thompson. Those are your 12s. The headlines to me is the U.S. kept two stars. They kept Carmelo and they kept Kevin Durant. That's huge for them. Paul George coming back and doing it and making it is a huge feel-good story. And I think for a lot of NBA fans that don't watch a lot of Toronto basketball, DeMar DeRozan, this could be his breakout time. And I wonder if being around this culture is going to be helpful to his development. Not that he has that much more to develop, but I think it'll be interesting to see his development after playing with the national team for a summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at this team, it's interesting that some of these guys, committed, and a lot of them are free agents. You look at Durant, Harrison Barnes, DeRozan, as you were talking about. A lot of these guys have to figure out their situation long-term as well, where they're going to play next year. And even Carmelo, he's definitely served his time. He's been committed, so you thought maybe this would be the one he would skip, but especially with his health his health history. But Carmelo loves playing for Team USA. He's very dedicated, and he's obviously trying to recruit Kevin Durant as well. So that's smart on his part. But it's a good team. I mean, it should be favored again, as usual. Obviously, this is going to be a little bit different, with the whole Zika virus concerns. That changes a lot of things. A lot of guys are afraid to go. I mean, even, I know Pau Gasol has been very questionable in his regards, whether he's going to go or not. I think he's a little unsure. So that would change the whole dynamic for Spain. I don't think Marc Gasol is playing due to injury. So, USA, they're a little thin at point guard, obviously, with all those guys not playing. They're a little small as far as, their center position, but they are so dynamic and athletic on the wing. They have so many different things they can do with this team and so many different lineups they can throw out there. And like you said, Paul George, so happy to see him back, and I really hope he does well and stays healthy. And DeRozan and Lowry, it'll be nice for everybody, outside of Toronto to get to see these guys play.
And I just, someone else pointed this out, and I wish I could remember who it was because I would credit them. Carmelo Anthony always says yes, always does this. I don't know if it's the Jim Boeheim factor and the fact that he gets to play for his former coach. I don't know if he enjoys winning things, and maybe that's why he plays for Team USA because he's almost guaranteed a championship every time. But kudos to him for just saying yes every time.
Absolutely, and you just hope he can stay healthy for the season, and it won't catch up to him.
Yeah, seriously, Kyle. We got one more appearance in this run that you have every April, May, June, July, and then you'll get about a two-week break, and then we'll have you back for Rio. But thank you, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up. I have enjoyed your company during this run.
Jeremy, as always, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure, and I really enjoy it.
And who knows, because technically free agency starts, what, Friday?
July 1st, yes.
All right, so maybe we'll have you on next week, and the last 30 seconds of this program will be completely irrelevant.
That'd be fine with me.
Kyle, thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Teeing It Up. Whoops, and that's all for Teeing It Up. We'll see you back here next week. Have a great night, everybody.